Welcome back, guys. DGS 205. Busy day today. We have the Think Tank coming up at 4 p.m. with Alvin Reed and Kurt Barr. Coming up at 3, we have a couple of fine musicians, Jay Chambers, Walter Parks, who are playing at City Winery tomorrow. They're going to come in, play a couple tunes for us, get to know them. Let's kind of do what we just did off the air. I like that. Wheels and I, both former athletes, and Wheels is coaching. Tonight he has his first doubleheader, right?
Out in the cold.
Nice.
Let's go.
40 degrees, home at midnight. Love it.
Yep.
Love this time of year for Wheels. And I am a drummer, and I told Andrew that I discovered this guy named Mike Johnston, who is a drum god, like modern drummer covers, and he has dedicated his career to teaching. And he does this mikeslessons.com, and he's an amazing teacher, an amazing player, and just kind of an all-around good guy. And I think I've decided that after playing drums for, 45 years or more, that I'm going to actually learn how to do it and take some lessons. We're going to get Mike on the show, just kind of give him some pre-publicity. But anyway, we were talking about how when we were kids, we didn't really have coaches. We just had our dads. And our dads were dads. And some of them were ex-jocks, but like my dad couldn't throw baseball. He didn't grow up that way. He was literally fighting in World War II when he was 17 years old.
Right.
And so I learned how to play baseball by playing with my friends. That's how most people my age learn to do stuff. And I learned to play drums by lying to my parents, telling them that I had been playing drums in school, and the band teacher thought I had talent, and I had $200 in my bank account, the Shell Credit Union, and I wanted to buy a set of drums. That's how I got a mini bike. Lied again. Told my mom and dad I'd been riding dirt bikes for a year. Don't spank me. Don't get mad. But I'd really like it. And I'm pretty good at it. I'd never straddled a bike before in my life, which is pretty much my MO for the rest of my life. Like, for real. What I'm going to say is going to sound like I'm trying to trick people into telling me I'm pretty. This is true. And a lot of people out there, not a lot, but some people out there will relate to this. I have one talent. And it really is a talent. Not many people I've met can do this as well as me. I can fake things really well. I've always had the ability to watch someone who's good at something do it and then replicate a plausible version of that thing. So when I probably was the best drummer I've ever been at 16 to 20 years old because I was just doing it all the time. And had you not known I wasn't trained, you would have thought I was trained because I was pretty good. But I wasn't. I don't speak the language. I don't know what a paradiddle is. I don't know what rudiments are. I do everything wrong because I'm faking it. Same thing with sports. Same thing with academics. Same thing with a radio career. I just see people do it and I'm like, I got the gist. Let's go. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so turning the ripe old age of 60, I thought, well, I'm going to pick out one thing and learn how to actually do it. And I'm scared and I'm intimidated and I don't want to do it because I'm going to suck. And it's going to be really, really hard because you can't fake it. You have to actually learn it. It's a language and it's empirical. And yeah, so we're just talking to Wheels about his coaching and how expensive it is and how much it takes dedication from the kids and the parents and the coaches. But what an amazing thing. The Kevin Wheelers and the Mike Johnstons of the world exist to help people actually do things as opposed to just fake them really well.
It is pretty funny to me that like forever people have accepted music coaches, singing coaches, dance coaches. And in the last 15, 20 years, sports coaches have been more of like professional ones, paid ones, right? I took guitar lessons when I was. Why has that always been a thing? But then when it's sports, it's like, oh, that's terrible.
It's a good point.
You're making it too hard. Well, maybe. This is the thing with all of these things, right? It's got to be, one, within the family's means, and two, it's got to be because the kid wants to do it, right? Like, for drumming, you can't make someone be good at drums if they don't want to do the lessons.
Yeah, because you went through that with piano, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, I wanted to play piano, but I didn't want to practice piano, so
I was the same way on the guitar. It wasn't for me, mm-hmm. and I didn't want to keep doing it, so my parents didn't make me keep doing it. They made me try it, and there was an interest. I had an interest in it, And then I realized, nope, don't like this, boring, I don't want to do it. So they didn't make me do it anymore. But we forget that the benefit, when we were talking off the air, I used my sister as an example. My little sister was a phenomenal competitive dancer her whole childhood. I mean, you know, always dancing with kids 3-4 years older. My parents probably spent, from the time she was 10 until she finished high school, they probably spent $10,000 to $15,000 a year on costumes, training, travel, you know, the fees that go along with being in all of these competitions with all these recitals. And you know what? She didn't turn pro. She's not a professional dancer. But she does teach dancing. And she's making money doing that for her entire adult life. And the point is that I think everybody just has to have perspective. If you're going to put money into your kid, whether it's baseball lessons, guitar lessons, drum lessons, dancing competitions, whatever it is, understand that that is not an investment in going pro, because that's probably not going to happen. But that doesn't mean it's pointless.
Let me ask you this, just parenthetically there. Chances of going pro without it today?
Almost none. And I will say this, you will hear from a lot of, like, I speak more of baseball because I know baseball and I know the tournament structure, scouting structure, the way players are recruited. I know that better than I know it for football, basketball. But it's a similar dynamic in all sports, and I think it's probably similar in things like dance and cheerleading and things like that too. Anywhere there's a competition that involves physical ability, right? The means of scouting, finding players, finding talent is so much more detailed now than it used to be. You will hear from like former athletes or major league players, like, kids don't need to do that. They don't need lessons. They don't. Well, your kids don't, because your kids have a former major league dad teaching them. Some kids don't have that, but they have the same love that your kid does, but they don't have the best coach in the world at home on the couch with them. So, yeah, there are a lot of kids that need that. They need the level of competition. They need the exposure. They need to show whether or not they actually care enough. Like, that's part of what you're learning.
Which, you know what? It's so valuable.
Yes.
Let's say that you get a kid who thinks he wants to be a pro player.
Yes.
And does 2 or 3 years with you and goes, you know what? I don't dig it that much.
Some of my favorite kids over the years have been at the end of, like, because I coach 14-year-olds. At the end of their 14-year U season, they're like, you know what? This was so much fun. So, but what I realized is I don't want to do this in college. I don't want to be that serious. I'm going to play high school, but I'm going to play for fun because of my friends play, and we're going to have a good time, and that's really all I care about. And that's a good thing to figure out, right? I mean, wouldn't you we talk about this all the time about going to college, and you don't really know what you're studying and whether you're going to like it or not. Wouldn't it be great if in all things you could have that experience where you're like, boy, if that's what it takes, I don't want to do that. Right? I mean, wouldn't it be great to learn that when you're 15 instead of when you're 20 and you got to change majors and now that's going to cost you an extra year, another $30,000 in your college education?
I'm telling you, that's why I've said for years now that your senior year of high school should be internships. It should be experiences, because take it from me, once your kid goes to KU, they're done. They're majoring in drinking their face off. I mean, like, college is college. I mean, she's taking classes-ish, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, get some experiences under your belt before you actually go somewhere where you or someone else are paying $150,000, $250,000 to get you trained.
Yeah.
That's what college is supposed to be, is getting you training for life.
Yeah.
Well, if you have no idea, and how could you? If you've never walked into an attorney's office, what made you think you want to be a lawyer? From watching L.A. Law, like me, that didn't work out.
Yeah,
you know,
the best thing that you can do for it doesn't, again, it doesn't matter what it is. I speak a lot about sports because I know it, but this is true for academics. It's true for what college you want to go to. If your kid wants to go to film school, if your kid wants to go for anything, the best thing you can do is find a way to be the most honest evaluator you can be about and with your kid. Mm-hmm. Bring them into it. Have the conversations with them. And if you can't be unbiased and if you can't be very results-oriented about those types of things, then ask someone else to maybe give you some of that information, because realistic goals. You should shoot for the moon if you want to. You know, I mean, I was always like, my brain was, I'm going to be a major league player. And my body was like, no, you're not, because you're not talented enough. But you can still have that desire and benefit from the effort, right? Benefit from trying to do it. Mm-hmm. I had 3 at-bats in college, my entire college baseball career. I wouldn't change a damn thing. Because what I learned there was, okay, A, you're not going to be good enough to be a major leaguer, so how else do I channel this? The experiences that I had, the people that I met, the things that I was taught, even in that environment, work for me now, 30 years later.
How quickly did you know you weren't?
I mean, so I always joke, I tell this story, and this is absolutely true. I thought this. The first practice I was at, the first day, I went on the field, and I was like, oh my God, everyone's better than me. I had never been in that environment in my life. I mean, I've been on teams where there were better kids, of course. But I was never on a team where everyone was better than me. And I went out there, I was like, uh-oh. Better get to work. And, you know, look, sometimes that works out. Sometimes it doesn't. I was also at a place where I probably shouldn't have been talent-wise. Hmm. Like, I was punching above my weight class being at Miami. I probably would have fit in talent-wise better at, I don't know, like a Central Michigan or something like that. But again, I wouldn't change it.
Yep.
Because what I learned in that time benefits me now 30 years later. And it doesn't matter that I didn't make it to the big leagues.
You'll completely get this story. I've told it a million times, but I don't think since you've been on the show. I was a good baseball player, and our high school coach, Coach Rage, literally Hall of Fame. He was a legend in coaching in the state of Illinois. And he called me at home before my 9th grade summer. And said, I've watched you play, and I want you to come play for me with the varsity for the summer program. And he said, you're not going to start. You may not play much, but by August or September, you're going to be a much better player playing with these 16, 17, 18-year-olds than playing with your 14-year-old friends and batting 700. And I told him no. I wanted to be with my friends. I wanted to be on the all-star team. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to go ride the bench with a bunch of guys that were older than me and bigger than me and intimidated me. And he was super cool about it. He's like, I understand. Valid decision. Good luck. I'll see you down the road. And I've regretted that.
Don't.
No?
No. You made the right call.
Tell me.
College. I tell every high school coach, don't bring freshmen up to varsity just to watch them sit. It doesn't make, you got to play to get better. You have to get the reps. You have to get at bats. If you want to bring kids along, like, you know, like I would offer up a great compromise. How about have the kid practice with varsity on a regular basis? Be around those older guys, see what it's like, do the drills, do everything together with them, but make sure they're getting games. Like, go play on JV, go play on freshman. I've seen it happen. One of my favorite kids, I'm not getting into names or anything, but one of my favorite kids that I've coached since he was 8. He's now a college senior, but when he was a freshman in high school, they put him on varsity and he never played. He didn't play till like the end of the year. And it was because I won't get it any further, because if I get into the reasons, it's going to expose something. But anyway, he sat, and it ruined his summer that year. Hmm. He went to play summer ball after his freshman year and he couldn't hit because he hadn't had any at bats. He didn't get to play. And then eventually he caught up, because the next year he did play, and he's obviously a Division I college baseball player. He's a phenomenal player. But, like, sitting doesn't make you better.
So Coach Rage was trying to ruin my career.
No. I think he thought that would help you. And, by the way, in some ways it would. It would expose you to, oh, my gosh, this is what you need to be a varsity player. This is how we do things. And there's value in that, but you also have to play games or you're not going to get better.
224 DGS. Okay, we did this off the air. Cardinals.
Yes, sir.
Last year, they were picked to win the division, and we know what happened.
Yep.
And we know what happened because basically anything that could go wrong did go wrong. This year, the front office made moves, made improvements, and now we're injury-ridden like crazy for the beginning of the season. One of our coworkers was saying, like, Cardinals are going to suck. It's going to be even worse than last year. You were saying, no, they're going to be great.
No.
What'd you say?
I said they're probably going to be okay.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Because when I said I'm in the middle, you said between terrible and mediocre.
Yeah,
that's right.
Right.
Flesh that out for us.
So, like, what happened last year is really unlikely to repeat as a whole, right? Because everything that you could think of that could go wrong went wrong. The entire rotation fell apart. The entire bullpen fell apart. Arenado had his worst year as a major league player. Goldschmidt had some bad luck. I think he was okay, but his numbers were down a little bit. And then you look around, and O'Neill got hurt again. And you just go, they had the whole Contreras thing, like that stupid thing. I still can't believe they did that. So you went around almost everything that could. Donovan got hurt. Gorman eventually got hurt, right? There's like not Jordan Walker got sent down and you know, had his issues trying to get his swing right. That's not all going to happen again this year. Just the odds of that happening 2 years in a row would be pretty slim. So you should be, just on luck alone, probably four or five games better than last year. Just on luck alone. And that's even with your injuries now and all of that. Then where you're hoping for more, and by the way, I'm not saying you're going to get it. I'm saying where you're hoping for more is you're hoping that Sonny Gray is as good as or a little bit better than Montgomery. You're hoping that Lynn's going to be a lot better than Waino. And I don't know if he will be, but that's what you got. That's your hope. Because Waino had a 7 ERA, man. I mean, it's not going to be too hard to be better than that. And you're going to need, like, Kyle Gibson needs to be better than Jack Flaherty was. And not going to be hard. Again, Jack wasn't very good. So you need Matt's to be better than he was. Like, you're needing a lot of things that aren't guaranteed, but they're also not crazy. And then the bullpen is, I think, set up, barring injury, to be a lot better than it was last year. It was terrible last year. So when you throw all of that together, and what are the odds that Arenado is going to be his worst again? Now, his worst year in baseball last year was still good for most people, really good for most people.
Like Tom Ackerman said the other day, good team, not World Series winner. Even if things go well for us, you don't see the team as...
As it is today, no. Not the team that's going to make the playoff run. But they would have to address that by the trade deadline if you're in it, right? Because they're going to need another top-shelf starter if you're going to make a playoff run. You're not making a playoff run with one top-shelf starter.
And didn't you say last week that if things do go poorly, sell faster?
If last year happens again, it might be time for a big change. And by big, I mean more than a few players. Like, it might be you explore trading Paul Goldschmidt because he's a free agent at the end of the year. It might mean you're going to explore some other guys you think are longer term guys, but if you're going to do a little reset, maybe you can afford to move them to get better assets, future assets, or to fill weaknesses from areas of strength, right? Like, as an example, you could trade Brendan Donovan. You don't want to. He's a guy that is really good. He's probably your best leadoff guy. He's a great on-base player. He can play everywhere on the field. You don't want to move a guy like that, but it could be a smart move if you're going to take a step back. You know, I mean, if the pitching staff is bad again this year, you probably just cut bait on almost all of them. Outside of Sonny.
To accomplish what?
To add talent for the future, to create opportunity for young guys that right now might be a little bit blocked. Now, that's if it looks like last year. If it looks like last year and you get to June or July, you should be trading everything you can. Outside of Arenado and Walker, like, you don't want to trade Wynn. None of the young guys. It would be any veteran player that can bring you a good return. In that scenario, should be considered if it's that bad.
What if we're...
It won't be that bad, I don't think.
What if we're contending?
Well, I think then you got to add. And you got to add somebody that can pitch. You need somebody that's right there at Sonny Gray's level to join him in the rotation if you're going to make a playoff run. Like, it's really hard to make a playoff run with pitchers that don't strike people out. And who knows? Like, could Michaelis pitch that well? He has in the past. So if he's pitching like that, sure, but you'd still need another one because Lynn and Matz and Gibson aren't those guys.
235 DGS and KMOX. If you're listening on the venerated 1120 AM, it's 2024. You can do much better. If you're anywhere around Highway 40 between the rivers, go to 98.7 FM. If you can download the Odyssey app, which I know you can because I did it, then it's going to sound pure. Whatever. I struggle with how to describe that.
It's digital clear.
Just perfect.
Yeah. It's the way it's meant to be. Sounds like it does to us here in the studio.
You can also podcast, which we get literally millions and millions of downloads a year, which we really appreciate. Makes us look really cool. You guys know that whatever the story is, I usually have a weird take on it, or a different kind of take. And I want to do that right now with this Sean Combs P. Diddy.
Oof.
Puff Daddy, whatever. So if you're not familiar with him, he is a rapper, hip-hop star, producer, huge in the business. And there have always been sort of whisperings about him, and, you know, a few people have called him out about being kind of weird.
Famous people recently.
Famous people.
Like 50 Cent, Cat Williams.
And his multiple homes were raided by the authorities, Homeland Security, FBI, basically suspecting him and his sons of sex trafficking and some terrible, terrible things with violence to women. Here's my weird take on it. Being a law school graduate and being someone who practiced for 10 years, I have an appreciation of the legal field, and I have an appreciation of things like due process and innocent until proven guilty. However, I'm human. And the reason we have these venerated rules is because we're human. When this human sees the feds raiding your home, I know you did it. Now, I don't really know you did it, but in my mind and in my chest, I go, he did it. And if you saw the feds raiding my home and you said, Glover did it, I understand. You feel me? Mm-hmm. It's like the reason we have guilt, innocent until proven guilty, the reason we have due process, I think, is because our natural wheelhouse, our natural swing is to go, oh, they did it. You feel me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, also, you know, the FBI doesn't do that on a whim either. So it's
right.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's part of where that comes from is like, if they're busting down your doors and waving guns around or whatever at you.
Well,
they got pretty good intel that you did it.
Well, the main thing that we hear all the time, right, is federal prosecutors don't like to lose. So that's what's been said for decades, right? Because how do they advance? How do they that's their win percentage. They're not going to do very well if they win 80%. They need to be like 99% when they're going to press. And I don't think we have charges, do we?
No. He had been sued by Cassie, the R&B singer, and she alleged that she was trafficked, raped, and beaten by Diddy over the course of 10 years. He settled that lawsuit a day after it was filed.
So next day.
So that's the kind of thing where it's like, well, that took you no time at all to make that situation go away. That's looking incredibly suspect.
And there's another suit now, right, from a producer?
Yes.
And I forget the producer's name.
Lil Rod Jones.
Okay. And you're not getting your home raided because of a lawsuit.
No.
It's because the federal prosecutors think they have the evidence to bring you in and obviously to seek evidence in your home. But I don't think, he clearly wasn't there. And now there's all this stuff. Like, this is where the internet's going wild, right? Like, there are people like, his plane left the United States and it went to somewhere in the Caribbean. I don't know if that's true or not. I know that all the Twitter detectives think it's true.
Yeah.
But.
Man, I'm sick of the Twitter detectives.
Oh, my God.
I got to say. After the Kate Middleton stuff and this and the bridge, it's like, you guys are just sitting at home on your computers. Like, in some cases, you might be figuring something out, but in general, you're just grasping for straws.
But there will be people that find kernels of truth and find information, but they're outweighed by the 95% that aren't finding anything. They're just they're just making stuff up or guessing.
Here's another take, and it's kind of loosely based on my past in the legal world. So one of the jobs I did in my 10-year run as an attorney is I was a defense attorney, and a products liability defense attorney in particular. And so we would represent, you know, ATV makers, motorcycle makers, lawnmower makers, bandsaws, blenders, you name it. And a lot of what we did was helping them to do warning labels. And I remember once it was, you know, those continuous hand towels that they have in bathrooms where you just keep pulling it and it keeps going around in a circle. Mm-hmm. We had to make one that said, like, do not swing on this towel or put it around your neck because someone did it. Right. And I've always felt I graduated from Wash U, but I was born in South Roxana, right? So don't try to put one over on me. And I'm like, we need to warn less people. We need to thin the herd. And I have especially been thinking this with the eclipse glasses. If I see one more local news story about how you need glasses to watch the eclipse, I'm going to go nuts, because if you're so stupid in 2024 that you don't understand that you can't look at the sun unaided, and if you're standing in a crowd of people who are all wearing glasses looking up and you're not, and you're too dumb to realize that, I'm not sure I want to save your eyesight. There's a take.
Hardcore.
There's a take.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm being facetious, but only a little bit, because I think we've gone so far into over-parenting each other. We are just, we will not let anyone move an inch without correcting them, or without educating them, or without this, or without warning them. And it just feels very...
Yeah, but don't we need those warnings and those educations for people? Because the average person is pretty stupid. Look at what happened with the pandemic. We had professionals telling us, like, hey, this is how you should handle this. And everyone was like, nah, I actually think I'm going to do my own research on this one. Like, we need to do that, because I just don't feel like, I feel like you're giving the average person a little bit too much credit.
Probably. But I'm just so mad at the stupid.
Yeah.
And I've been the stupid, you know, situationally, we're all the stupid. Situationally, I have swung on the toilet hand thing, you know, I've taken my rides on the on those things.
Yeah.
Metaphorically speaking,
I think everybody has on something.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, if you haven't on something, I don't believe you. If you say you haven't, if you don't want to be that. But you but the basics, though, is what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Like. Self-preservation instinct.
Yeah.
Like, we shouldn't have to tell you, don't go play in traffic.
Like, every year when it's going to be 0 degrees and the local news has to tell us to wear a coat, you know, or like, make sure you bundle up because it can be frostbite within 5 minutes. Oh, my God. We know. And if we don't know, if it's 0 degrees and you go out in a tank top, you get what you get. Boy, I'm old.
I mean, Dave, do you have a lawn?
I'm telling you,
should
get
I get off
get
it?
Get off it. I do, though. I just get so sick of treating everyone like they're in third grade.
Has it? I don't know. Because I haven't been my age ever before. Was it like this back in the day? Because I do remember, like,
oh no,
I do remember when I was a kid seeing the shots of, like, it's snowing, we're out on the overpass, it's cold. I remember that. But
no,
no, people just got frostbite.
Yes. Like, if you looked at the sun and you went blind. Yeah. I swear to God, I'm not even kidding.
Where we got all that info.
You know how many times my parents told me, don't look at the sun? Once.
Yeah.
They weren't going to tell me twice.
Yeah.
So you're just saying you believe in the law of you believe in natural selection, and you believe that these newscasters are interfering with that, and we should just let the people.
I believe in warning people once. In a reasonable way.
Yeah.
But when you just keep pandering, it's just...
Let's zoom out. Do you think that this, I don't know what you call it, behavior, just call it behavior, because I don't know if it's instinct or if it's learned or whatever, but this behavior where we're always looking out for each other, is that why there's so many of us? Is that why we run the planet? Because, like, tigers aren't out there like, hey, other tiger. Watch out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
One less tiger.
You know, there's not like other animals do protect their own or their pack, but
I really analogize it to parenting. That if, you know, I taught my kids don't run out in the street. I taught my kids don't this, don't that, you know, for safety reasons and just getting along with other humans kind of reasons. But then you can go too far. And every time they leave the house or walk into the yard, we don't run the street. And I just feel like that's how things have developed now. Anyway, let's talk to Jack on line one. Hello, Jack. Go right ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, you guys. How y'all doing today?
Good, man.
Good deal. So I was telling the guy, my neighbor, a few months ago, we were talking, and he told me that he can look at the sun without hurting his eyes. And he says when he does look at it, he can see the firmament that is around the earth, which says in the Bible, it's, I'm serious.
Oh, man.
He told me that the government tells us not to look at the sun because they don't want us to see the firmament around the globe. And, you know, I'm like, okay, whatever, dude.
Why do they not want us?
And you know what? I don't want Jack's neighbor to be blind.
No.
Much. But if he says he can see the firmament and the Joe Biden or Donald Trump's trying to keep him from seeing Jesus in heaven, he didn't go blind.
Sounds like we're the blind ones. I don't know.
Why don't they want us to see the firmament? Is that like a flat earth thing?
That is a part of that. He's talking about it from a biblical perspective, like his neighbor is. But yes, that is part of the flat earth.
But why does the government want us to not see?
I don't understand. That's the part I've never understood about flat earth. Like, why would everybody lie about it?
And you find out.
Yeah.
If you think you can see Jesus by looking in the sun, brother, take a look. Rach, one of your stories on the Google Docs says the Facebook poke is back, baby. And 4 minutes ago, I read that Facebook poke is back. And I was like, that sounds horrible.
Yeah, the poke actually never went away on Facebook. Do you guys remember the Facebook poke? It was popular like when Facebook first came about. And it was the kind of thing where like instead of commenting or messaging your friend, you could just give them a little poke and let them know you were thinking about them. That kind of faded into the background. Facebook has buried that feature under a bunch of different settings, but they are bringing it back to the forefront as kind of like a throwback and a remember how fun this used to be.
Yeah.
So it's coming back.
And Facebook is also, or Meta, doing what? Repressing political content?
Yeah. So Meta made the decision a couple months ago that they would be repressing political content on Instagram and Facebook. And they kind of quietly rolled that out. And it actually became the default setting for most people. So people who are on Instagram and Facebook expressly to, you know, share political views feel like this is suppression and this is, you know, taking away their right to free speech because they're making these posts and the posts are not getting as great of a spot in the algorithm as they did previously. But Meta is doing this as a way to, I guess, combat misinformation before the 2024 election. So, I mean, it just all depends on how you look at it. For me, I look at it and I go, cool, I don't get on Facebook to look at political stuff. So that's great that they're, you know, taking it down a notch in the algorithm. But if that's your business and that's why you survive on that site, like, I definitely get why people think that's a suppression of speech.
I'm not trying to be a jerk, because sometimes I am. But if your business is relying on some free service provided by another business, maybe you need to find a different way to do business.
That's a point that I've thought of myself many times over the years because people do say things like, oh, X is shadow banned me or Facebook is throttling my posts that you can't see them. I'm not able to run my business as I was. At the end of the day, you are relying on them to get your message across. So, I mean, the solution obviously isn't to go out and build your own social media platform.
Right,
that's impossible.
Right.
But you are kind of at those platforms' mercy when you're running your business on them.
I'm not trying to suggest that makes it okay. It's just part of the understanding. Like, if I'm trying to use social media, whether it, like TikTok, if they get rid of TikTok and I'm reliant on TikTok for my business, well, then I need to adapt and find a new way to do it because
it's like having an illegal snow cone stand at a Costco and then they find you and they kick you out to the parking lot.